Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson, and we are going to go in depth on Luka Doncic versus DeAndre Ayton. And to start, Kellen...
Have we done that before? Have we talked about them before? Are you sure?
Those... Who again?
No, right. We never talked about them, and we saved our super hot takes to get clicks for this podcast.
We've already gotten the clicks, so we can just...
Yeah. Sucks to be you, internet commenter.
Kellen's going to start off by reading mean comments from his article about how DeAndre Ayton is not his top prospect. Just to get the juices flowing.
Yeah, sure. Why not, you know?
I can't tell if Kellen's actually happy about this.
I have no emotion towards it. I don't hate them. I don't love them. I actually laughed at a few when I first read them. Our commenters are a special group of individuals who seem to hold more bias than they believe I do for certain things, believe it or not. Was I expecting the comments on here to be nice? No.
No.
Was I expecting them to be really mean? Yes. Because a lot of these people just don't like me as a person. So that's nice of them. Let's get into it, shall we? Todd Vincent says, I read this entire rhetorical piece of garbage. I could completely pick it apart, but it would be a giant waste of time like it was reading it. Thanks for the comment and the read, Todd. That's two clicks, not one.
At least you read it all the way.
That's what you ask. Usually they scroll all the way down to the comments and say, the more Kellen Olson writes, the more I want Ayton. Another love note from Kellen Olson to Doncic is another one. LOL, just knew it had to be a Kellen Olson article. That one I can't read on the air. Olson isn't old enough to remember either Tony Kukoc or Akeem Olajuwon. To be fair, CBS PHX, I was 6 years old in 1996. So relax. Hakeem, I was probably legitimately like not old enough to even see him as a kid. So you got me there. And that's where he comments back and says, actually, Olajuwon played until 2000 and you probably could have seen him like I did at your age. Wow. Bill Arnold actually said, hold on, let me see. This is the state of my well-being right now. What a great article is the comment. I'm just expecting it to be like a roast.
And
in
it's
the middle.
Not.
And it's actually him agreeing with me.
Period.
So that's very nice. I think that's kind of it. My favorite comment was from Sam, who said, how much are the Kings paying Kellen to write this stuff?
Dude, if the Kings are paying you to do that, that would be the ultimate like Russia type NBA move, like just hacking. That would be impressive. Anyway, the point is, if you haven't heard, Kellen has DeAndre Ayton second. I actually do too. Mine's much more like I am indecisive. If I had to be the Suns and make a number one pick, I would probably take DeAndre Ayton because of the whole like everyone would want me fired situation. And like there's legitimate reasons for that.
Well, what's your main takeaway from that?
Everyone thinks DeAndre Ayton's the clear, surefire number one pick.
And that he's nearly flawless as a prospect. Like that's the interpretation I'm getting, because I know it's internet comments, but people aren't even tweeting at me and disproving what I said, which is like, that's entirely okay with me. If you want to say like, I'm not buying this, I'm not buying that. The entire point of the article was to just say that DeAndre Ayton is an upside pick. People aren't acting like he's an upside pick. They're acting like he's 20-10 out of bed and is going to be better than Karl Anthony Towns in 2 years. That's not what he is. Could he be that in a very, very, sure. very, very, very good outcome for him, like one of the top outcomes for him? Sure. But that's not probably what he is. And I think that's just kind of the point of reading those, actually, and why I said it was okay to read them is I'm used to reading stuff like that about me. I don't really care at all. Reading them, of course, will lead people to believe that we do care. We do care for the entertainment value. It was good fun. I think the thing is like this is just the mentality around the team right now. This is what it is. If the Suns take Doncic, this is going to be it for a majority of the fans of the team from our space, at least, which is Arizona Sports Radio Station 98.7 FM. Like that is the majority takeaway.
The casual fan is going to have very, no trust.
No, I think it's hardcore fans too that watch like every Suns game and watched a lot of Ayton and people who probably even watched some of Doncic, and they just don't buy it at all. They think Ayton's the guy.
Yeah.
And I guess that was the only thing I wanted to accomplish really with that, was just to say, this guy has flaws. He's not perfect. He's kind of an upside pick. That's why I have him number two, but that doesn't really matter to me at all. It just mattered more about writing that, but some people thought it was garbage, and to those people, I say thank you for reading.
Let's start with, in breaking these guys down, the positives. I'll go first. DeAndre Ayton, in the last, maybe since Dwight Howard or something, one of the most physically imposing, when you look at just his stature, draft options coming out of school. Has great touch on his jumper, dominated the college game in a bad situation, got numbers in a bad situation. The whole thing with him is there are just so many unknowns, and you touched on this in your article. Like, we didn't see him rim protect because he wasn't in a good spot, but also there was plays that didn't take much video, scrolling through video feeds, to find where he would just move away from a driving guy and just not go for a shot block. You touched on a lot about his offensive limitations. He didn't flash very much. He has a face-up jumper. That mid-range long twos are actually really accurate. But beyond that, he didn't show a lot in the post. He didn't show a lot from beyond the three-point line. He doesn't go hunting for contact and just like physically overwhelm guys. And to be fair, again, this is the college game where guys just zoned him and they couldn't even get him the ball because they would just put five guys around him and he couldn't even touch it to do those things. But we don't know. And people making these assumptions, and I think this is your point, people making the assumptions that he's this diverse offensive force are wrong. He just bullied.
He can shoot. He's skilled. That's the takeaway
I get. He can shoot. Lots of people can shoot. Serge Ibaka learned how to shoot and became a worse player for it in the NBA.
Gorgui Dieng's a really good mid-range shooter. It doesn't mean he's a skilled offensive player.
Right.
Robin Lopez is a pretty decent mid-range shooter. He is the opposite of skilled when it comes to big men. I think his post moves, they look right when they look right, and they look really wrong when they look wrong. I linked out like three separate pieces in that article just because I wanted people to see like the other side of it. Jay-Z from the Stepien wrote about his face-up game and just had all these super concerning clips that were like, here's him taking a dribble and running into three guys and trying to make a pass. And it just like, there is a lot left for him to grow into as a face-up guy. And the reality of today's NBA is that guys like Anthony Davis, even Joel Embiid, who's more of like a bruiser type dude, DeMarcus Cousins, same way, they have a lot of face-up qualities. Al Horford is another one, and he just doesn't, his face-up jumper is literally like the only thing that's there for his face-up game, which is a huge part of it, and it's a big plus, and a lot of it plays a good chunk into why I value him a lot, is because he has that reliable shot. But yeah, the shot chart numbers were concerning from like the post area where he was working, and he is just not, I don't think he's a great offensive player right now. People just think he's a great offensive player right now. I personally just don't see it. I see the potential for it. I linked out a clip against UNLV where he like did this double spin move in two dribbles, and in like a second and a half, he was from 18 feet to the basket, and I was like, what?
And the announcer goes, oh!
Yeah, exactly. I think that's everyone's thought. That's pro Ayton whenever he does literally anything. Anyway, that's why he is a potential top pick, is seeing moves like that and seeing him do that. It's just we didn't see it enough. And that's a theme of these guys that we talk about, is that we just don't see things enough to feel confident about them. We just did not see him be a rim protector. Again, who knows if he was playing center, if that would change, and we'll get onto that later. But as far as offense, I just don't think, if we can say like floor and ceiling right now, I think that his floor as an offensive player is relatively decent.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. comparing it to Doncic, I don't really know. And I think that's where you can kind of expand on where Doncic is in that regard.
To me, his offense and defense, when you look at, people keep getting caught up in, oh, he has a jump shot, so he must be the modern NBA center. Oh, he guarded fours on the perimeter, he must be in the mold of a modern NBA center. No. If you look at Al Horford, for example, Al Horford was literally running point guard for the Celtics half the time in the playoffs. I might be exaggerating half the time, but he was bringing the ball up. Like, that's what a traditional center with modern skills brings. DeAndre Ayton's not doing that. If you could promise me DeAndre Ayton will just promise to go into the post and he'll have more space in the NBA game and, like, back down a dude with two dribbles and then make a move or a pass, and he can do that consistently, then I would feel a lot better. But we don't even have evidence of that. So we talked about this before the pod. When we look at the two top guys, DeAndre Ayton has a huge spectrum. If we talk about floor and ceiling, where I think his floor is lower than Doncic's, his ceiling might be higher, but that's where this gets murky.
I think this is coming off as really negative about Ayton, because it's just like the initial thing is there for like every part of his game. It's like for the face-up game, you want the jumper and you want him to be fast enough to take guys off the dribble. Check, check. He can do both. Does he have the skill off the dribble? Can he read defenses off the dribble? That's a big thing about being like a face-up big, is that like you need to be able to take two dribbles and make a right decision, and I don't see it. Like, his instincts on both ends, I just don't see it. There were too many times I saw him catch the ball under the rim and pivot out for a hook shot from 6 feet instead of just taking contact and drawing a foul or dunking on the guy.
Yeah.
It just happened too many times, and that's where you go to his frame and you say, this guy, 6'7", 260, you can't teach that. Look at the size of him, best athlete this decade. No one's going to be able to stop him. He's going to command double teams right away. I mean, he even struggled sometimes scoring on like single coverage at times because he was just limited. And inside, it's just like it was too inconsistent with not his motor, but just like getting into contact and finishing at the rim and overpowering guys consistently. We saw it, but we just didn't see it enough. And that's where you get into Jason Tatum danger zone here. As many people in this comment section has pointed out, this dweeb had Jason Tatum eighth or whatever. Why should we listen to him? You have a fair point. Like, you should not overly value my draft hits in the past 2 years. But all I'm saying is, to extend on that Tatum point, it's like he already has a lot of the things. Jason Tatum already had a lot of the things. All you need to do is put it together. Oh, now I'm playing for Brad Stevens. Oh, now I'm in this perfect situation that's kind of worked out to where Kyrie and Hayward are both out. They need someone to step up and be their best player. He was their best player in that series against the Cavs. And it was just this perfect situation for him to really blossom, but also we were just wrong, and I was wrong in particular, because he could pass, he could shoot, he could really score off the dribble, he could finish, he could defend guys, he could push the ball, he could do all these things, but we just weren't sure about how well he could do them. It's like DeAndre Ayton can do all that stuff. He could be, if we go into ceiling
or
here,
learn and get better, yeah.
Or learn. If we go into ceiling here, I think what I wrote in there is his defensive ceiling is insane.
Yeah,
he could be literally one of the 3 to 5, maybe even the best, like, defensive. Like, that's where you get into like Russell and Wilt, and where I get into like the all-time great comparisons, where you're like, you like shiver a bit. But if we want to talk about like everything absolutely goes right for him, he's that level of dominant as like a defensive center. And that's just, I'm not saying he's going to be a defensive center, but that's the potential he has on that end. So I think that's where this gets dangerous. But to that point, if we transition to Luka, or just like quickly hit on Luka and I'll swing it back to you, Luka is good at a lot of things right now too. And that's why we like him so much, is that he's so well balanced. Okay, maybe he doesn't have explosive qualities to his game. He can't really take a guy off the dribble right now in terms of just like clear out, I'm going to beat this guy off the dribble, which is a big part of scoring as a perimeter player. But there are things called ball screens that he can just use all the time. And look, like LeBron and everyone else uses ball screens a lot too, and he's going to use them too. So I think he's fine there, but that's kind of my point on Ayton, I guess, to his the whole floor-ceiling argument.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of unknowns, and the Tatum thing's really important to me because we were... This is where when you say a guy has flaws, Tatum's flaws were he was a mid-range guy, he doesn't pass, he's very limited, he hits mid-range shots. But you say, okay, he adds a 43% shooting three-pointer to that, then it's a completely different story, and that's why he was pretty much so good this year. And all that said, he was still an average-ish NBA player. That's what he was. They hide people well that are rookies in Boston. Like,
and his passing, it was like, just to quickly say, like, his passing was, he didn't pass much, but when he did, it was like, oh, you can take two dribbles, and then when the double comes, you can just make the bounce pass to the big. Like, you can do that pass. That's the only pass he needs. We just didn't see it enough, and
Didn't have to also, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't see it enough, and we didn't see it enough is something I've said like three or four times already for Ayton. So I think that's where floor ceiling, like you fall into a trap of not properly evaluating a ceiling, and I think that was the biggest mistake in evaluating Tatum, is that if he takes all these average skills, from my perspective, they're average, and they just bump to above average, and maybe he's just a great NBA three-point shooter, like holy moly, this guy's like a dynamic really player. He adds a little bit more speed and quickness that we just never saw at Duke. We never saw that. Please tweet me clips from Duke that showed him going that fast and being that strong, because I didn't see it. But yeah, I think that's where you run into the argument of Ayton and having him number one. That was my whole point of writing that. It's like, why is no one telling me Ayton's number one because he has the highest ceiling? Like, no one's telling me that. Everyone's telling me the opposite.
Yeah.
And I'm confused by it. I'm really perplexed.
I think if we want to end on, or at least transition to Doncic, I think Ayton's, the most promising part of his game is just that the NBA is not college basketball. And I've said that every podcast, and I will keep saying that. But when you put him in a pick and roll, and if you have shooters around him, and he's rim rolling, like, he's going to be elite at that alone. And when people say, well, the Suns could sign Clint Capella, that kind of stuff, Capella's value in just being able to catch lobs is huge. Ayton will be that good already. So that's already changing the dynamics of an entire team. But also, like, my whole thing with the modern NBA center, blah, 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 is that Ayton still has a lot to prove, where I wrote he's already a better perimeter defender than a low post rim protector. And that's considering his last game against Buffalo, where he actually had to guard perimeter players the whole time and looked awful doing it. So it's just, if you look back, Ben Simmons had this same kind of aura about him when he played at LSU, where he just didn't look like he wanted to be there. And that's even less than what we can say about DeAndre Ayton, because the dude has a motor. I don't think effort was ever really an issue with him, and he just needs to learn how to do certain things. And for Ben Simmons, we didn't talk about any of those issues about he has zero jump shot, he is lazy on defense while he's with the Sixers, because he's in a great situation and they brought the best out of him. And that's the challenge with any of these guys.
Yeah, I think all we were really with Ayton was like one of these little things away from having him number one. Like, if his situation in Arizona wasn't a dumpster fire, his point guard was at least 6 feet tall, his other guards wanted to pass him the ball, he was playing center, we were actually able to see him in center situations, both on just an NBA offense, unlike what Sean Miller runs, let alone for a power forward, a center as well. Like, they ran a lot of, like, Lowry-type stuff for him, but just pushed it a little bit further in towards the mid-range, and that was just, that was very meh. And then you just get into like all his other areas. It's like, if he just played like physically dominant all the time, he'd be number one for us. Like, no question. It's not even close. If he had like just a little bit more of a post game, like, I'm not talking like Embiid when he's doing the dream shake and everything. I'm just talking like a little bit closer, we'd be there. If he would have just been not looking brain dead defensively in terms of instincts, like, all the time, then we'd have him number one. It's really that close. Like, to me, I always say it's not close for Doncic, but that's because of all those things put together. So that's where we look at him and say he is without a doubt. To me, I see a gap between him and the third best prospect in this draft.
Yes.
And I'm just worried, specifically in Phoenix, that's where I say it's close between Doncic and Ayton. In Phoenix, I don't think it's close. I don't think he can take a guy like this for Phoenix. Just with his defensive flaws and everything, maybe that just changes under Igor and the defense is fine all of a sudden. But with everything Phoenix has struggled with in the past like 2 years, it just does not seem like the best place for him to grow into the player he is. Maybe that's reading into it too much, but that's just where I get back into ceiling floor. And I feel like if you take him in Phoenix, you're betting on more floor outcomes. Whereas if you take Doncic with Igor, with another ball handler that's literally perfect for him, like that's where you get more into his ceiling. And I feel like the ceiling in for Doncic is more likely in Phoenix than the floor for Ayton.
Yeah. I would disagree in that, only to say that it doesn't matter whether it's Phoenix or anywhere else. Like,
he's going to land in a terrible basketball situation, I guess, since he's a top five
and
pick.
And if I am the guy drafting, I would hope that I'm not even thinking that my situation's worse for him than anywhere else. But yeah. Doncic, on the other hand, is just, it's just a very different lens on a guy because he's playing pro ball. He's the number one guy. And people look at his numbers in Europe and don't understand he's not playing as much, but also roles don't work the same way. Like, a star player in Europe is not going to be scoring even necessarily above 20 points, where the defense is just going all in on stopping that one person. And that's why people, I think, look at Luka and they're like, oh my God, he didn't even hit 20 points per game in Euroball. But if you look at the tape, if you look at how he played with Slovenia last summer, like, it's just, to me, the maturity and how the holes in his game are there, but you know how to fix them already. And I think the biggest thing with that is when you take into account the athleticism concerns, his shooting, like, he can't separate as easily against NBA athletes. Does he project, all right, I think he's going to be a great player, that's why his floor is higher than Ayton's, but does he project as, like, a surefire, like, number two guy? Like, is he going to be Andre Iguodala? Because if you're a guy who can't really get his shot...
But he can't defend. Why would he be Andre Iguodala?
Can we get to that dumb thing later?
I hate play. That's exactly why I hate player comparisons. It's like, we can compare DeAndre Ayton and David Robinson physically, but that's literally it.
Yeah.
Literally it. And what you're saying is, like, 6'8".
Elite role player, though.
6'8", elite role player forward who can handle the ball and distribute. That's what you're saying.
Do everything.
Yeah.
Pretty well. If not do everything very well, like Iguodala does. But, like, what's wrong with taking that guy number one is the whole issue for me. Because if you look at it and you say, okay, he's going to be as productive as Andre Iguodala, completely different player, but as productive as an elite role player who does everything very well, that dude still won a finals MVP.
This is the other argument I haven't heard. Is like, is it's all about Ayton, and I don't see the counter argument for Doncic beyond he can't score off the bounce that well in an isolation setting. I think my answer for why you would pass on his floor is that you want the best prospect in your eyes is the guy with the highest upside.
Yeah.
I do not agree with that. For example, like, Tony Roten was a guy in his draft class who had a top five ceiling. And he went in the 20s because he's Tony Roten. And Ayton has the best upside in this draft.
Yeah.
People saying Jaren Jackson Jr. has the best upside in the draft. No, no, no. Because, yes, Jackson can move a little bit better than Ayton, but Jaren Jackson cannot take two dribbles and put you in the stanchion. Like,
no.
I sound like someone on our air right now when I say that, but and people are going to say that. But it's like, defensively, you want to talk about, like, rim protectors and just switching and sliding on guys. Dude, he was so impressive, like, in terms of his switch and slide stuff and blocking shots, like, on target when they were on the ball. Off the ball, whole different story. But on the ball, that's where you look. And then offensively, obviously, there's a lot of room to grow, but there's room to grow.
Yeah.
It's not like, is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to score, like, 20 points a game in the NBA ever? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that's extremely unlikely, but it's the counterpoint there. So I think that's why you would pass on Doncic's floor. The other point in terms of roster construction would be, if you take Doncic, and this is like the other popular counterpoint, is like, who does he guard? Who does Jackson guard? Who does Booker guard? Where do you play this guy? You're shaking your head because you have been saying, not for clicks, but since November, that it doesn't matter. We've been saying on this podcast for like 9 months now that it does not matter where he plays in this team. And this is back when we thought like we thought differently of TJ like a year ago compared to today. And we still felt the same way about
it. Who's Steph Curry going to guard? It doesn't matter when he's draining 35 foot.
And it doesn't matter when he switches like six times. Like that's it's just the way the NBA works right now. But I think the actual point I agree with there is that this is an offseason. They want to win 40 games next year. That's what they want to do. That's a very high goal. It's perhaps aspiring for a bit too much, but hey, never stop dreaming out there, kiddos. That transition is difficult. Now you have to move TJ, or now you have to have one of these guys come off the bench, or now you have to ask Josh or Devin to primarily pick up point guards. You have to radically change something compared to last year. I mean, Devin did spend time guarding point guards last year at times. Like he was playing those point guard lineups, and occasionally when he was playing point guard, he was picking up those guys. But you take Ayton, you have a hole at center. You take him there. You're already looking to pick up a certain point guard. You already might think that Brandon Knight is more than capable of starting next year, and you don't want him coming off the bench next year. That's where, to me, the entire ceiling floor argument becomes easier, because DeAndre Ayton has a decent floor already. That's the whole thing we're not trying to say here, is that he has a low floor. It's just like his upside is like his ceiling is a tier or two above Luka's, and his floor is like a tier or two below Luka's right now. And Ayton is just super simple, and we don't know who they're targeting either. Do they already want to go get Dennis Schroeder or Kemba Walker? Do they already want to go get center? Is like, besides Clint Capella, if you can name another name that they might go after, Montrezl Harrell, like I have no idea.
You draft and then you worry, yeah.
So if we're talking from a two-year rapid transition, it's like, this is the type of move where you draft Luka and it's like year two or three of the playoff draw, we're completely changing the way we're going to play basketball type of thing. DeAndre is like plug and play, 18-9, 33 wins next year, 42 the next year, trade for Kawhi, let's do this. And Luka's like, everyone moving past with the ball. Look at Luka make that cross-court read. 27 wins. I'm not saying they'll be a worse team next year with Luka other than Ayton, but you kind of get what I'm saying. You're starting a little bit lower in the process just because it's such a rapid change in philosophy. And that's the cool thing about having Igor as a coach, is that he said multiple times he doesn't care who they take and he wouldn't commit. I asked the question about like, what's it like your philosophy with basketball, like your like not playbook outlook, but just like how you're going to manage the roster. And he's like, I don't know what the roster is right now. I have no idea. Like he had a post-oriented team when he coached the Georgian national team, and he had a rapidly different offense when he was coaching Slovenia. So
was that Pero Antic? I don't remember.
Oh my gosh.
Is he George? I don't even know. Sorry, off topic.
Yeah, I don't really remember that team, but I think that's the entire counterpoint, is that it's just an easier trajectory. But for us, counterpoint, take the best guy. Luka Doncic is the best guy in our opinion.
I just think if you look at both of these guys and you say, what if neither reaches their ceiling, then Luka's safer. Luka's going to be a very good starting player, a role player. I think DeAndre Ayton is going to be a starting player no matter what, but I think he could be, I've said March and Gortat, mostly based off, like, I think I was always disappointed with Gortat because it was like, this dude's huge, he's muscular, what's he doing taking 15-foot jumpers and fading away on 3-foot hook shots, which is kind of what DeAndre Ayton does. Sure, he gets a double-double still, and DeAndre Ayton's a better athlete than March and Gortat, but I think that there's a lot left there, and I would have to see like DeAndre Ayton flash more to this point, which, again, is you have a starting center. That's a really good baseline.
Something that Dave Byrne specifically has been talking about a lot, ever since I wrote the pre-lottery story, which was like only half of these dudes really work out well.
Yeah.
You need to get the right guy. To take it to that angle, I think if you look at this team and say, if this is like a bottom 50, like there's like a plane and it's like this is the bottom 50% of his outcome and this is the top 50% of his outcome. If we're looking at the bottom 50%, for Luka, you're looking at a guy who, like, his vision and passing ability is not going anywhere. Like, that's an elite NBA skill right away. Who is a below-average three-point shooter who can create in the pick-and-roll and score for himself, but in terms of individual offense is a step behind. He's a smart team defender who works hard, but he gets burned on the ball and burned and dies through ball screens all the time. That's him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a flawed player, but with DeAndre, it's a guy who can do rim runs. He can catch the ball within 12 feet and make a move that's kind of hit or miss sometimes. He can definitely nail like a mid-range jumper. Never develops three-point range, though. Never is like... Embiid shot league average his first year, went down to like 30 or 31% this year. He's like below 30%. He's not even there in like that terrible outcome. And then defensively, if he's on the ball, gets switched on, he actually does pretty well. But off the ball, it's just like a layup line at the rim because he just doesn't have instincts there. And that's where like... offensively, I can't hand this guy the ball to make the right decision or score efficiently, consistently, as like a number one or number two option. Then defensively, he's just a rebounder. He's just a rebounder who can switch on ball sometimes. And that's where you look at floor ceiling and say, in terms of floor, Luka is by far the safest guy because at least you get the smart, heady player who can make all the right passes, can score, can shoot. Sure, he's not going to be a great shooter or scorer in that outcome, but he can still do it at a decent level, whereas his biggest weakness in that regard would probably be creating his own individual offense, which he wouldn't need to because Devin Booker exists, and his defense, which he would get relentlessly attacked in. I think that's something you worry about once you get to the playoffs, just like how I'm saying we haven't really talked about if NBA teams are going to attack him like Buffalo did. Teams don't really do that in October, November, December, January.
They sure as heck do.
They do where they want to go, though, in the playoffs, and that's where I look at both these guys and say, like, that's the scary thing, is that both of them can be a guy that teams focus on defensively in the playoffs and try and really exploit, but I feel like with Luka, it's safer, whereas DeAndre is just like, we're going to test you at the rim. Like, we're going to clear shooters. They're going to go at you at the rim.
We can twist this and end on kind of a NBA Finals note. Cavs, Warriors, if you want to bring in the draft, we can. These teams don't really like to use centers anymore. I know Clint Capella was there with the Rockets, but he even like was pushed off the floor at times. Just where the NBA is going, I think, plays a large part into like our discussion about these two guys, too, because like I was watching Joe Johnson was facing off against Draymond Green for like 2 minutes the other night, and like Joe Johnson's been compared to Luka, and it's like, holy crap, Joe Johnson's taller than Draymond Green, who's playing center right now, and that's what Luka possibly could be on the defensive end when you consider positions. So I think that's, to me, the whole centerless NBA is really going against Ayton, even though like his coach and he will play that up like I'm part of the new NBA, I shoot threes. It's like, no, I don't buy that.
So I actually disagree with you.
Okay.
Shocking to hear on this podcast that we actually disagree for once. What I didn't have room for in that piece was a point on the two Eastern Conference teams that were left. Aaron Baines looked good in his minutes because Aaron Baines, but Aaron Baines can move his feet. He's, admit it, you see that guy move and you're like, Aaron Baines? Like, I thought he was big brute dude who just like elbows everyone and says stuff in his accent and has a ponytail. He's actually like pretty fine in terms of switching and moving his feet. And at least like those LeBron possessions, it wasn't like Zaza where Zaza's just like in his stance and then watches LeBron go by and tries to move and can't. Like, Baines was at least, like, trying to keep up with him and could move his feet a little bit. I mean, that's the worst example possible for this because it's LeBron.
Why don't you use Al Horford?
Yeah. But that's where I look at it and say, if you are a center, if you're Tristan Thompson and you can do a couple things really, really, really well, like Karl-Anthony Towns is an excellent offensive NBA center. He has his good days and bad days on defense and can rebound. Rudy Gobert is a phenomenal defensive center. Clint Capella is phenomenal at rim runs and being a guy who can switch and slide and also protect the rim. If Ayton can be phenomenal as a post scorer and a rebounder, I don't think his rim protection and overall defense matters as much to his outcome. I don't think it matters as much because he can still play. Will he get exposed in the playoffs? Like, of course, but I think you can still like play him. But,
yeah.
And if he's not, though, like that's the thing is, like, I really like his passing and I really like the fact that he can knock down the mid-range jumper, because that's like a little safe haven of stability for a second, that it's like, okay, maybe he's not just like an outstanding post scorer, but he can hit the jumper, can make a good pass, and that stuff matters. So I think he can exist in the playoffs, and like even if he is like the outcome that we fear, which is like the defensive mistakes, the lack of versatility as a scorer, but he has to like be that. He has to be like 12 to 14 rebounds a game, dude. He has to be like 20 a game in there. And look, if the defensive flaws are there and everything else, the flaws are there, that's still okay. And that's where I disagree with like the whole center point. And I think that is a greater extension into why people think he is the no doubt number one, because he can be, these people think he's going to be better than Karl-Anthony Towns. So of course they think that he is going to be fantastic at a couple of things at least. Let alone like everything in the universe, including writing it cursive or something. I don't know. But
do you teach cursive anymore?
Probably not, but that's how good he is, right? that's where I see the argument for him as a center, and I just don't buy that like he would just be played off the floor because he was so good at switch and sliding in particular, that I think that he could at least survive there. If he's a guy that like they have to double, he can score, he can hit this mid-range jumper, he can really, really rebound the ball and just be a nightmare on both ends in terms of boxing out, because he has a really good motor.
Yeah.
So it's a debate that we had for, like, we were in November and we were talking about, like, whoa, could Mo Bamba be number one? Like, we were not set on Doncic being number one. We've just had this, if you're new to the podcast, we've had these discussions for months, and it's pretty clear, like, in like, February, I thought Doncic was the guy for me since last summer, but I was like open to it being someone else, obviously. And then like once like we got to like March and saw the Buffalo game, and I was like, nope, that's enough.
And that's what's weird about this draft class too, is like before like the Ben Simmons draft, it's Ben Simmons. There's no debate. The two guys atop this are in their own tier for both of us, but it's, they have their question marks. It's not like either brings this one or two even super elite things. I guess with Luka, you could argue too. But they're flawed. They're just, their floors are pretty high up there. Like when whatever you think they are, I think they're both going to end up being starting caliber players. And I can safely say that. And I think that's what's, it's unique because, like you've said, there have been so many hit and miss top 1, 2, 3 picks. But I think that if there are misses, it's not going to be a terrible miss in the top two. Unless, like,
it's the law of averages. It's like, yeah, okay, if these two guys are really good, then Michael Porter Jr. has to retire in 3 years because of his back. Mo Bamba's just nothing. And Trae Young can't get off, like, anything on offense and is just a mess defensively. It'll balance out.
Yeah.
So if you like think it has to be one of these guys that's going to be good, maybe, but there are times that it's happened, and this certainly looks like the year. I mean, everyone talks about the Greg Oden over Kevin Durant thing. It's like Oden just got hurt. Like it was.
Yeah.
That's all it was. He just got hurt. Maybe Ayton or Doncic is just, they go through some extreme thing like that where that's just the way it goes. Like, that was the year when it was supposed to be these two awesome dudes just like this, and one of them got hurt. That's just the way it goes sometimes, and hopefully we don't have to worry about that.
So on the website, on arizonasports.com, we started rolling out kind of five guys who we think would be really great gets at number 16. Next week we're going into number 31, that type of thing. We're going to keep you updated on all the workouts. We're three workouts in. lots of guards. I think two forwards out of like 18 players. But yeah, and we'll continue this Doncic-Ayton debate because, as you can tell, we think it's a debate, even though 85% of you might not agree with us.
Yep.
But thanks for listening.